to the 10th canto, Pastimes. In the last class, we talked about the pastime of Lord Brahma stealing the boys and calves and cows of Lord Krishna. And that pastime ends that Lord Brahma, after seeing the actual mystic potency of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, falls down at the lotus feet of the cowherd boy, who he now has directly seen to be the source of all the Vishnu expansions, and feeling great ecstasy and humility, he begins to make prayers. So those prayers are the subject of the talk tonight, the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. And there's some nice, there are two paintings of this. There's an earlier painting. Nice. And then in this. So we have some note paper if anyone has any questions, and I certainly hope you do, because it will help me to develop this lecture when I give it again as part of a seminar. You can write them down now, and at the end of the class I'll give you some time to write again, and then we can look at the questions. We've heard that the Acharya, Madhvacharya, in his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, did not make any comment on the Brahma Vimohana Lila, or the stealing, or the bewilderment of Lord Brahma, as it's called. Since Madhva is a disciple in this succession from Lord Brahma, he didn't want to comment about Brahma being bewildered. But the fact is there that although Brahma is a great devotee, he doubted Krishna in Vrindavan, because Krishna appeared in so like an ordinary village boy, and so the mistake that Brahma made is one that we may mistake also. If we have some preconception that God has a certain kind of majesty, or what to speak of, if we think he can't even be a person, then you misunderstand and make offenses. So we've also been discussing or looking at a section by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his book Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, in which he analyzes each of these demons especially, but a couple of other activities which show anarthas, unwanted things. And he analyzes how the demon represents a certain anartha that every one of us has. But it was especially clear in the case of Lord Brahma's behavior in that pastime. And as we discussed it, it was the bewildering of Brahma. This removes skepticism due to the cultivation of karma and jnana, and the tendency to emphasize awe and veneration as opposed to the sweetness of love. This is also considered an offense to be avoided. So, Krishna mercifully revealed his mystic potency before Brahma, showed him all the expansions of Vishnu. And, of course, that pastime involved more than that. It involved his sharing himself with all the mothers and fathers of Vrindavan who wanted to love Krishna as their own child. Then Brahma was not just humiliated, but he was enlightened. And now this chapter is all his realization. It's a very philosophical chapter, because we were trying to discuss so many pastimes. We haven't gone into really philosophical chapters like the prayers of the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. But we want to cover this chapter, although not in great detail. In the children's adaptation of the Krishna book, as I mentioned, this chapter is real quick, and they don't discuss the philosophy. But it's a very important chapter for our understanding and as an authority for the Krishna consciousness movement. And it's not dry, it's bhakti. And also the personal relationship with Brahma and Krishna that comes out there is very nice. And I'll be reading some sections from it. For our benefit, Lord Brahma, our benefit meaning that we're not there, but he was there. So he expresses in words how Krishna looks and his understanding of Krishna. He says, "Let me offer my respectful repeated obeisances unto the son of Maharaj Nanda, who is standing before me with conch shell earrings and a peacock feather on his head. His face is beautiful. He's wearing a helmet garlanded by forest flowers, and he stands with a morsel of food in his hand. He is decorated with cane and bugle, and he carries a buffalo horn and flute. He stands before me with small lotus feet. My dear Lord, people may say that I am the master of all Vedic knowledge, and I am supposed to be the creator of this universe. But it has been proved now that I cannot understand your personality, even though you are present before me just like a child. You are playing with your boyfriends, calves and cows, which might imply that you do not even have sufficient education. You are appearing just like a village boy, carrying your food in your hand and searching for your calves. And yet there's so much difference between your body and mine that I cannot estimate the potency of your body. As I have already stated in the Brahma Samhita, your body is not material." I have a personal memory of Srila Prabhupada speaking about this, as he did many times. But there was one time in 1972 in Los Angeles, Prabhupada had gathered some of the newly formed GBC members there, and they were in his room. And he began to speak very personally and strongly about accepting Krishna and asking us, really challenging us, whether we accepted the Krishna or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, "As far as I'm concerned, I accept Krishna." He said, "And I'm not just accepting on faith, but it's a fact. But do you accept Krishna? And if you don't," he said, "then not just superficially, but if you don't actually have conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then how can you help me?" And it was we felt very much on the spot and somewhat embarrassed, looking within ourselves at the lack of conviction we had and what much he was asking. But in that context, he began to talk also about Brahma saying that I accept you now as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although I see that you're Krishna. It's like Prabhupada saying, "Do you accept Krishna as God?" And so Brahma was saying, I certainly accept God. I always have accepted that there's God, but I accept you as God, although you are like a child." So we have to have that conviction to be Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada is still asking everyone that question who wants to be a member of the Krishna consciousness movement, if you accept this small young cowherd boy with a morsel of food in his hand and the flute tucked in his belt. There was another time I've heard about that when Prabhupada went to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he went to the first time, only time, he went to the storefront, and many people came down. Even then and today, there's so many kind of meditators and interesting people go to live in Santa Fe in the mountains. They came down to see Prabhupada, and one of them said to him, real offhand, he saw Prabhupada, they said, "Who's Krishna?" And Prabhupada answered equally spontaneously, he said, "Krishna is the cowherd boy who's in charge of the universe." Oh. So this is a Krishna conscious person's conviction. But if we require philosophical support for our convictions, this is a good chapter for it. These prayers by Lord Brahma, he's our sampradaya head. And he leads us in the conviction of Krishna consciousness with prayers like these, as well as the Brahma Samhita. And as you may have noted, it's very relishable, the way Prabhupada writes the Krishna book, and he puts certain words into Brahma's mouth. So as he said, Brahma says, as I already stated in the Brahma Samhita, well, that's not a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada has Brahma saying that, as I already stated. Sometimes Krishna says that too in the Krishna book. As I said in the Bhagavad Gita. And someone pointed that out to Prabhupada. What, how come you're doing that? He said, the Krishna book says summary study. Summary study means I can do what I want. So Brahma's position, he's one of the greatest Vedic authorities, no matter what your sect is or conviction, the father of all living beings, the giver of the Vedas, and he's a direct servant of Lord Krishna. So the fact that he accepts Lord Krishna means that all living entities should at least listen to what he says. Even today, if some big man could become Krishna conscious, that would be very influential. Well, this is the biggest man, and the biggest demigod. This is what he says. One of the first points is based on what he just had seen and experienced, Krishna manifesting all the Vishnus and the energies. Lord Brahma says, all these powers come from your cowherd form, and therefore I cannot estimate or conceive of your body or the happiness that you experience in this young, human-like form. Brahma says, although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? This is like the principle which Jiva Goswami says we must accept for any talk or understanding of Godhead, which is that he has inconceivable potency. So Brahma leads us in this understanding. He's so great that he can't understand him, his greatness. Then there are a lot of important verses in this chapter. At the end of the chapter, at the end of the talk, I'm just going to recite, just to hear a few of them in Sanskrit and English. But at least one of them we'll look at, and it's the third verse in this chapter. Agyane prayasum udapasya namante eva jivanti san mukaritam bhavadi avartam stane stita srutigatam tanuvan manobir ye prayaso jitya jitopi asitais trilokyam. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and, with their body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. I'm sure many of you know this verse was also spoken by Ramananda Roy in his talks with Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya asked him to describe the perfection of religion, he put forward many different conclusions and supported them with verses, but Lord Chaitanya rejected them all and said, that's superficial. But when he spoke this verse, then Lord Chaitanya said, finally I accept this. On the basis of this verse, now we can discuss a further about up to spontaneous love of God. So some of the features of the verse are that it stops speculation about Lord Krishna and recommends hearing from pure devotees. And it's so nice, especially we've been cultivating this in these classes, statements about how important it is to just hear about Krishna. And he says you should dedicate your life to these narrations and offer respects to them. To hearing them, and that's all you have to do really for to be successful in spiritual life is just spending time hearing from the right sources. And by this hearing you can conquer Krishna, meaning that Krishna will be inclined to you. He takes it as a very good act, although it's not a difficult one if you listen to the philosophy or the descriptions. And in order to do it, you don't have to change your family or job or anything. That point is made. You can be in any ashram or any social position, which is not true of a lot of other Vedic activities. So this is the very important statement about hearing. Then Lord Brahma, although he's speaking very nicely, he knows he's been foolish, so he begs pardon, personal statement. In the Nectar Devotion, his mood at this time is described in several different contexts. You know, the Nectar Devotion says, this is an example of ecstasy in such and such condition. This is, and they tell some example of a devotee. So Brahma is, this particular situation is mentioned, for example, as an example of an expression of love for Krishna under humility resulting from committing an offense. So sometimes, there are different ways you love Krishna. You may love him when you see his beautiful form or so many occasions. But, and of course, Rupa Goswami is very psychological, all the different possible ways that these things are brought out. So this is another thing, that sometimes you commit an offense to the Lord and you become very humble, and that's a kind of loving exchange. And it's also spoken of as an example of lamentation caused by offense. So these ecstasies were manifest by Brahma. It's not exactly like a negative thing. Brahma's symptoms of being stunned are also mentioned. He was stunned by what he had seen. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada says, Lord Brahma presented himself to Lord Krishna as the most presumptuous living creature because he wanted to examine the wonders of Krishna's personal power. He asked Krishna to pardon him. He reminded Krishna that he was a faithful servant, and on this basis, Lord Krishna should please excuse this relatively minor offense. I know one godbrother mentioned, I was talking with him once about prayers and asking him what was his practices. One thing he said was that when he goes before the deity, greets the deity every morning, he recites this prayer of Lord Brahma, saying that I'm your devotee, please excuse my offenses. So Prabhupada writes, Brahma has certainly rendered such service to the Lord, much service to the Lord. As the Supreme Personality in charge of this particular universe, he is without a doubt a faithful servant of Krishna. Therefore, he could appease Krishna. He asked that the Lord understand him as a subordinate servant whose little mistake and impudence might be excused. He admitted that he was puffed up by his powerful position as Lord Brahma. Because he is the qualitative incarnation of the mode of passion within this material world, this was natural for him, and therefore he committed the mistake. But after all, Lord Krishna would kindly take compassion upon his subordinate and excuse him for his gross mistake. So he had that much confidence in the relationship. It's not that I'm not your devotee anymore. And he was expecting Krishna to not reject him. Lord Brahma compared himself to a little child within the womb of the mother. Prabhupada says, if the child within the womb plays with his hands and legs, and while playing touches the body of the mother, is the mother offended with the child? Of course she isn't. And this is the example is appropriate because everything is within Krishna. So the philosophy that Brahma expresses about Krishna's supreme personality of Godhead is valuable, and this mood of asking pardon is also something that we can do. Although it's not that you keep doing this without some rectification, but it's inspiring to see such a great leader of the living entities humbling himself with sincere regrets. Then Lord Brahma declares that Lord Krishna is the Lord Narayan, the supreme person. To a Krishna Bhakta, there is nothing adding to the glory of Krishna to call him Lord Narayan. But many Vaishnavas consider Lord Vishnu the supreme personality of Godhead. So it's important that Brahma establishes here that Govinda, although a small boy, is the source of Narayan, who is the gigantic Mahavishnu. So Brahma, he's considered the son of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So he says that you are my father, Narayan. And this proof Brahma, this assertion and this proof was put forward by Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as he was establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then he went on to establish that Lord Chaitanya is the same as Krishna. So he quotes from this 14th chapter that we're reading, where Brahma says, "O Lord of Lords, you are the seer of all creations. You are indeed everyone's dearest life. Are you not therefore my father, Narayan?" Narayan refers to one whose abode is in the water, born from Nara, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. And that Narayana is your plenary portion. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj writes some verses of his own. He says, "After Brahma had offended Krishna by stealing his playmates and cows, he begged the Lord's pardon for his offensive act and prayed for the Lord's mercy. Brahma said, 'I took birth from the lotus that grew from your navel. Thus you are both my father and mother, and I am your son. Parents never take seriously the offenses of their children. I therefore beg your pardon and ask your benediction.'" Then Krishnadas Kaviraj says, "Sri Krishna said, 'O Brahma, your father is Narayan. I am but a cowherd boy. How can you be my son?'" So he was like playing, what is it, hard to get for not accepting that that I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You've already treated me like a little boy. That's what, I'm just a little boy. I'm not Narayan. How can I be your father? I'm a child. Brahma said, "Are you not Narayan? You are certainly Narayan. Please listen as I state the proofs." And he then went on to prove that Narayans are emanating from the plenary portion of Lord Krishna. So that the next thing that Lord Brahma did was describe again the Vrindavan Leela that had just taken place, and how this is another proof, a demonstration that Krishna is the inconceivable Supreme Lord. So aside from other proofs, Brahma says, "My dear Lord, leaving aside all other things and just considering today's happenings, what I have seen, are they not all due to your inconceivable energies? First of all, I saw you alone. Thereafter, you expanded yourself as your friends, the calves, and the existence of Vrindavan. Then I saw you and all the boys as four-handed Vishnus, and they were being worshipped by all the elements and all the demigods, including myself. Again, they all became cowherd boys, and you remained alone as you were before. Does this not mean that you are the Supreme Lord, Narayan, the origin of everything, and from you everything emanates, and again everything enters into you, and you remain the same as before?" A lot of evidence is being accumulated here to show that the Krishna of Vrindavan is the Sarvakaranakaranam, the cause of all causes. And with this chapter in mind, we go on hearing all the other activities, the killing of the demons and the dancing of the gopis and the playing with the children. And we have this authoritative evidence and conviction. As Prabhupada says, you accept Krishna. So this is a lot of evidence from Brahma. We are indebted to Brahma for this testimony, spoken with sincerity and honesty, logic and evidence. The gift of his prayer to the people in general seems in itself to make up for the mistake he made of trying to match the mystic potency of the Supreme Lord. So we can take it that Krishna brought it all about so that Brahma could go through it and then speak this realization. I mistook Krishna, but now I know from my personal experience. Then Lord Brahma actually slighted Vrindavan also as not a very majestic setting for the activities of this Lord of the Universes. But then he saw, Lord Krishna showed him the beauty of Vrindavan. So now he praises Vrindavan and wishes to be born there in some future life. First he prays that wherever he's born he could be a devotee. In fact, there's one, I think it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song or Narottam Das. There's a song that says that I would rather be born as an insect in a family where I could associate with devotees rather than be a Lord Brahma. So now Lord Brahma himself, he says also that he'd rather be a pure devotee than have an exalted birth or position. He says, "I do not even care what form of life I get in the future, because I can see that even in the form of cows and calves or cowherd boys, the devotees are so fortunate to be always engaged in your transcendental loving service and association. Therefore, I wish to be one of them instead of such an exalted person as I am now, for I am full of ignorance. Then he continues to praise the devotees of Vrindavan because they actually please Lord Krishna and they enjoy his intimate association. And Brahma was able to observe that. He saw the Lord drinking the milk from the mothers and the cows. Whereas some devotees who offer the Lord costly sacrifices don't really please him so much. But Lord Brahma is wanting to be born in Vrindavan in the future. Now he's quite humble. He doesn't aspire to even be a gopi or a gopa, but any birth. I am most humbly praying at your lotus feet for you to please give me any sort of birth within this Vrindavan forest so that I may be able to be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan. Even if I'm given the chance to grow just as the humble grass in this land, that will be a glorious birth for me. But if I am not so fortunate to take birth within the forest of Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that will be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotee's feet. Another devotee who made prayer like that was Uddhava, when he went to Vrindavan and he associated with the gopis. He was so much in admiration of the gopis that he wanted to ask them for the dust of their lotus feet. But Prabhupada says he thought that if I asked them, they may not like to do that. But he understood that there were no devotees as great as they were. So he thought, if I could be born as grass, they could, and then when they were going to see Krishna, they could step on me. So this is a similar prayer to Lord Brahma. He realizes that he's offended the residents of Vrindavan and considered them as material. So now he praises them as spontaneous devotees. And he thinks that Krishna will not be able to repay them. Their devotion is so complete. Then Brahma derides any person who thinks that he knows Krishna. This is some striking statements he makes, and we hear this especially sometimes from Hindu persons who were raised in the culture where they heard about Krishna from childhood, but they didn't hear that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or they may have heard that once, and then so many Mayavadis came and told them something else. But anyway, they were always hearing about Krishna. And then when they hear from someone who's actually speaking the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they say, "Oh, I know all about Krishna." In a slighting way, meaning that what they're actually meaning, I don't want to surrender to him or give my life to him, but you don't have anything to tell me about him. I know about Krishna. So Brahma is actually addressing that mentality. He says, "My dear Lord, I have nothing to say about people who advertise that they have already realized God or that by their realization have become God. But as far as I'm concerned, I admit frankly that for me it is not possible to realize you by my body, mind, or speech." So if somebody says that, "I know all about Krishna," we should say, "No, you don't. Even Lord Brahma says that he doesn't know even anything about Krishna. How can you know everything about Krishna?" Srila Prabhupada, he translated this in a different way in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in a verse there, when the Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanatana Goswami. He has Lord Brahma saying, "There are people who say, 'I know everything about Krishna.' Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they're all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words." That's a nice translation. There are people who say, "I know everything about Krishna." Let them think that way, as far as I'm concerned. Then Lord Brahma finishes his prayers and asks us to be allowed to return to Brahmaloka. He says, "I hope you will excuse me for disturbing you and your pastimes with your friends and calves. Now, if you will kindly allow me, I will immediately leave so that you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence." So he didn't feel qualified to remain there, and that was a fact, that to stay in Vrindavan pastimes, you have to have the right spiritual body and be in the rasa. We hear that even the goddess of fortune, she wanted to be with Krishna, but because her style of life was too opulent, she couldn't associate with Krishna and Vrindavan in her form as Lakshmi. So she performed penances to take a form of a gopi. And sometimes Lord Shiva and Narada, they wanted to be in the pastimes, but they couldn't until they were able, at least for some time, to take the form of a resident of Vrindavan. So Lord Brahma, as Lord Brahma, he's out of place in Vrindavan. So he was embarrassed and he was unhappy at his foolish attempt to bewilder Krishna. And he just wanted to go and at least render some service and be useful to Krishna as the master of the universe and benefit Krishna's purpose. Not in the Bhagavatam, but in the Nectar of Devotion, we hear some more, so it's nice to read these supplementary authoritative books. Then we see Bhagavan Uvacha, then Krishna says something back to him, recognizing the prayers. But there's no mention in Srimad Bhagavatam of any Bhagavan Uvacha. It just says that Lord Brahma finishes prayers, circumambulated Lord Krishna three times, bowed down, and returned to his residence. In the Nectar of Devotion, the fact that Lord Krishna was silent in response to Lord Brahma is explained as an example of Krishna's gravity. A person who does not express his mind to everyone, or whose mental activity and plan of action are very difficult to understand, is called grave. After Lord Sri Krishna had been offended by Brahma, Brahma prayed to him to be excused. But in spite of his offering nice prayers to Krishna, Brahma could not understand whether Krishna was satisfied or still dissatisfied. In other words, Krishna was so grave that he did not take the prayers of Brahma very seriously. After this, Lord Krishna returned to his pastime with the boys. That's the end of the prayers of Lord Brahma. Then Krishna went back to his real business, which is not to listen to philosophical prayers, but to go back to the picnic lunch. So he had been engaged for a year in countering Brahma's mystic tricks. But by the yoga maya, the boys experienced just a moment that Krishna left, and then he came back. They were even like amused that he came back so quickly. Prabhupada once gave this as an example that how we will feel when we return to the spiritual world, that although we've been gone a long, long time and been through all kinds of hells, when we return to Krishna's association, we'll feel as if we've never left, and everything, all the suffering will be left behind. So the boys joked with Krishna when he reappeared, as if he seemed anxious to get back into their company and that they not start lunch without him. When Krishna appeared before the boys, they thought, Krishna has returned within a minute. They began to laugh, thinking that Krishna was not willing to leave their lunchtime company, as Krishna is so affectionate. They were very jubilant and invited him. My dear friend Krishna, you've come back so quickly. All right, we've not yet begun our lunch, not even taken one morsel of food, so please come and join us and let us eat together. So this kind of equal treating, not even honoring him, he likes this better than the prayers of Brahma. And so they resumed their usual leela and returned home, enjoying seeing the corpse of Aghasura. The boys composed songs praising how Krishna saved them from Aghasura. But little did they know that 1 year had passed since the killing of Aghasura. So when this pastime was told to the best, most receptive hearer, Maharaj Prikshit, he relished it. And then he asked about, back to that pastime of Krishna expanding himself as all the children and cows, and how their parents loved their children more than ever before, whereas formerly they used to like Krishna more. So Shukadeva says, Maharaj Prikshit asks, how is it that the residents of Vrindavan had so much love for Krishna when he became their child, even more than their own children? And Sukadeva replies, because he's the super soul, he's the soul of all souls, and everyone actually loves Krishna. No matter what you think you love, it's just a faint indication of who you really love, who is the Supreme Lord. This is an explanation of self-love. I remember sometimes being asked that question by persons who weren't devotees, who would observe Krishna consciousness and said, where's the place of self-love in your movement? It seemed like you don't have enough, you don't culture enough self-love. And but this is the explanation of self-love. We know that you do love your body, but the reason you love yourself or your body is because the soul is in the body, therefore it's valuable. And the reason you love yourself, your Atma, is because of its connection to the Supreme Atma. That is the nature of the self, is that it's a loving entity of Krishna. So actually, you start with any self-love, even selfish, and it really leads to a love of Krishna, but we have to purify that. So we'll close the talk, but I said I wanted to read a few verses just so that we can hear the sound vibration, and some of you will recognize them to again impress us with the importance of this chapter, how there are some real gems, shlokas in here. Tate nukampam sukshamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam vidvagvapurbir vididham namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadayabak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering your respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. And in the chapter, Lord Brahma also said, Atapi te deva padam buja dvaya prasadale san ugrahita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahim no nachanya eko pi charam vichinvan. O my Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Samasrita ye para palavam blavam mahatpadam punya yaso murare mavambudir bataparam param padam 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 yatbi padam natesham. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is param padam Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. And Shukadeva blesses all the people who hear this chapter with his last verse. Any person who hears or chants these pastimes Lord Murari performed with his cowherd friends, the killing of Aghasura, the taking of lunch in the forest, grass, the Lord's manifestation of transcendental forms, and the wonderful prayers offered by Lord Brahma, is sure to achieve all his spiritual desires. So, we can... 10:30, this
10:13.
Is... yeah, right. Yeah, we talked about how the last book...
Yeah, and we were working on that after Divine Grace departed. And we were just amazed at the intricate philosophy that he was dictating, and as his body was so wasted, and you know, an ordinary man would have just been not been able to collect his thoughts. But he all seen the pictures of Prabhupada speaking in Yadavar's film.
Yeah.
So he's dictating the most sophisticated, complex purports about time and space and different relationships. Sure. So I just wanted.
Yeah. You edited it. You were,
no, I was the indexer, and I was just amazed that I was reading with the copy coming through, that this is supposedly somebody who's about to leave is dictating. It just isn't proof of Prabhupada's pure consciousness beyond the body. But his body was so wasted that it was just practically one of his most sophisticated chapters he ever recorded.
And very sweet and personal remarks in there too. We were relishing some of them.
The Alpha and the Omega. So could this be a pastime of Lord Brahma? So Prabhupada said something and nobody heard it. And but Shruti Kirti, who was opening the car door for him. And then Shruti Kirti got in the car with us. And he said, what did Prabhupada say? And Prabhupada said, why not?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur stated that it's an anartha to be interested in God's majesty over his sweetness. So how can we enter this sweetness as soon as possible without becoming a prakruta sahajya, one who takes it too cheaply? Anyone like to? Madhu, you want to try that?
Our Prabhupada is advising us how we can already turn to Krishna as a friend, saying that we have to pray to Lord Krishna like that. It's not that we have to, we don't have to see Krishna in awe and reverence. We can see him as a friend who's always with us, to turn to him to pray to him at any time we want.
Okay. And we can hear the pastimes which emphasize that, which we're doing, the 10th canto pastimes, any Krishna pastimes. Without becoming a sahaja, well, if we perform regulated devotional service and hear of Krishna's sweet pastimes, that won't happen. Here's one. If it is true that at one time each one of us was Lord Brahma, then why is it such a great or wonderful thing that Lord Brahma says he does not even know Lord Krishna in full? Well, maybe I was once Lord Brahma, but those are better times than I have. So whoever was Lord Brahma, if somebody in that position has that realization at that time, it needs to be respected. It is a wonderful thing. Lord Brahma is not an ordinary thing. And that's something that's very, to even try to think about that as some practical thing is very speculative, how everybody was Lord Brahma. But Lord Brahma is Lord Brahma, the topmost, the most powerful living entity in the universe. So it is, his testimony is important compared to others. If our sojourn in this world will seem like just a blink when we return to Krishna, isn't this a good answer for the origin of the jiva? Because there's some devotees say that we're never with Krishna. Prabhupada says, we'll go back, we'll feel we never were away from him.
Is it again?
It seems to indicate that it's returning to our place.
I always think of Prabhupada's words on that record. Originally, we're all just a conscious living entity. But due to association with matter from time immemorial, it's not just people from the room.
I don't think I can handle this question, but we're going to... probably too esoteric for me. You mentioned how Srila Prabhupada asked the GBC if they were really convinced that Krishna is God, and how the Brahma Vimohana Leela represents doubts that a jiva may have. The glories of Navadvipa and Vrindavan seem completely inconceivable, but you cited Jiva Goswami saying that unless Krishna's glories are inconceivable, how can they be Krishna's glories? So, for Vrindavan and Navadvipa to be Krishna's abode, their glories must be inconceivable. The fact that they choose that to be their abode, how could it be an ordinary place? Yeah. So our thinking that the abode is ordinary, it's the same ignorance that makes us think they're ordinary, inconceivable. If we think, well, hey, all this about Vrindavan, I want to go to Vrindavan, that's nice, meaning that we want to travel to India. But also we can do that without traveling to India. We get inspired to hearing about Vrindavan. Certainly, we must respect Madhvacharya's position of not wanting to comment on Brahma's bewilderment. Yet it appears that Brahma's doubt turned out to make him more glorious by the grace of Krishna. Since Brahma is a devotee, Krishna made the result of even his doubt a positive experience for him and an important teaching for him and ourselves. Krishna used Arjuna's apparent bewilderment on the battlefield and Pariksit's apparent hunger and thirst as part of his plan to benefit all living entities and glorify his devotees. So Krishna serves many purposes. Although we are not Brahma, can we feel hopeful in our doubts that even Brahma had some doubt? Krishna dispelled it, so surely he will help us with our doubts. Yes? Yeah, this is sort of an answer to a question I had. It was, is our sampradaya weakened by the fact that Lord Brahma displayed this bewilderment? So this is sort of a comment, like an answer to that. And then in addition to that, we can say, in any case, our sampradaya is not weakened by Lord Brahma doing this because we're coming into cyclic succession from Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya chose to accept Lord Brahma, which is good credit for Lord Brahma. But that we get it from Lord Chaitanya, there's no problem. And at the same time, Lord Brahma should not be found fault with. He's an Ishvara. He's far beyond our capacity, spiritually as well as materially. You said demigods couldn't participate in Vrindavan Leela if they were always observing Krishna's pastimes. Also, it seems that their participation was necessary as examples for us to allow us to accept humiliation as long as we become enlightened. Yeah, they come in and out of the Vrindavan Leela, observe it, throw flowers, and yeah. You said Lord Brahma had a relationship with Krishna, that he expected Krishna to forgive him for a minor offense. What about making offenses to the spiritual master who is so compassionate he always forgives the disciple, yet Krishna may not? Anyone want to answer that?
I remember one day, I think you already know, it was in Toronto where Prabhupada mentioned that Swami Bhan committed a guru aparad, and he said he had to perform penance for Lord Shiva to get free from the guru aparad. But yeah, in the morning walk in Toronto, I said, you go to Radhanadan Mohan's temple, and the right before the temple there's Swami Bhan's samadhi. I guess he must have got forgiven.
Yeah. That's an example of being forgiven. Yeah, we should expect that if Krishna forgives Brahma, and Brahma expects to be forgiven, because he's got a real service relationship, so the disciple can expect the spiritual master to also forgive him. That leads to another question I have. How can we feel confident that if we make a sincere and philosophical apology, as Lord Brahma did, that we won't again later make the same mistake? I was thinking that someone, out of a lack of confidence in that he might not break down and find that sincerity and that humility, thinking, oh, what's the use? If I do this, I'm not going to be sincere anyway. And so that would be like a real obstacle. But it would be helpful to get past that. But it would, if you thought, well, what's the use of making an apology because I won't be able to stick to it? So how can we feel more confident?
By not thinking that it's by our own endeavor that we're going to conquer our own anathas or start making mistakes, because by Krishna's mercy, His grace, and we can pray for His grace, and Krishna does give His grace, and Lord Brahmanda are other examples.
As interesting, the way you put it then, if you didn't come to that realization, it would be incomplete, like saying, I'm sorry for what I did, and I just know I'm not going to do it again, without thinking, you know, please forgive me. You know, it's up. If you will give me your mercy, then I won't do it again. You stop short of that thing. It's in my control. Don't worry, Krishna. It won't happen again.
What was that? What did Prabhupada say?
I guarantee it won't happen again. Go ahead.
famous prophet said, I'm simply praying to Radha and Krishna and not following the mind.
Yeah, I heard they said that. Where exactly? I don't know.
So that's why he never followed
the mind. Yeah, I was praying Krishna, Krishna, Bahima, Krishna, Krishna, hey. Any more? Yeah.
I think that there might be mistaken thinking that, well, if I do fall in line, it's Krishna's fault because
he was supposed to protect me.
So it seems like it's a combination of our sincerity and our endeavoring along with Krishna's mercy, and nobody can just say, oh, Krishna's not to do it.
Yeah, combination. You have to do some acts of rectification, some determination, display it in different ways. After Krishna expanded himself as all the cows, calves, and boys, the residents of Vrindavan increased to equal their love of Krishna. Did they experience any diminish of their love for their children when Krishna returned, the real boys, or was that love just redirected to Krishna again? I don't want to speculate, so I can't reply in terms of, yes, it says in the such and such chapter that this is how they felt after Krishna returned. But we do hear of past times after this, and it seems like everything is back to normal. Everybody loves Krishna, and more than anything, more than their own children. So that there was some change after that year was over. There was some change, but you know, it's the spiritual world, so it's not like everyone was very unhappy or something. When you say diminishing of love for their own children, they loved their own children. Who were their children? Their children were Sridham and Sudham and Soka Krishna and Radharani. So how could they not love their children? But that was a special time also when their children happened to be Krishna himself. So they used to love their children. It was just like a devotee now. A devotee loves his children, but he loves Krishna even more. That's not a slight of his children. So, but for a while, suddenly they loved their children like they used to love Krishna. I'll give just like an answer to that. Got anything else? Does Krishna forgive us as easily as he did Brahma? I guess everyone is individual. The individual reciprocation depends what you did, and Krishna is all forgiving. What do you want? You know, what do you want in your relationship with Krishna? That you want him to forgive him so that we can go back to sense gratification? Or do we want to be forgiven for our sense gratification so that we can render devotional service? Yayatam am papajante. Krishna reciprocates with you according to how you surrender to him. So this question is perhaps too general. You could say, yes, Krishna forgives us as easily as he did Brahma. But what are you being forgiven? What do you want to be forgiven for? And what do you want your relationship with Krishna to be? He can do it very easily. Yes, I forgive you for your mistake. Yes, you can become Lord Indra. Then you got very nice treatment, but you got cheated because of your not wanting to be a pure devotee or pure devotee devotional service. Yes, I forgive you. Yes, you can have good health and live to 100 years. And it didn't seem like it was that easy. He didn't be silent. Yeah, for giving like Brahma, to be engaged in pure devotional service. So we should follow Brahma, Brahma's prayers. All right, I'll stop then. Thank you. All glories are powerful.